It is Wednesday, November 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump praises the results of the U.S. midterm election. An Afghan pilot who penned a tribute to a fallen American soldier shares his memories with VOA. And singer Camila Cabello releases a new single and gets an award. It's all ahead. Results are very mixed in the U.S. midterm elections. Republicans strengthened their hold on the Senate, even as Democrats took control of the House of Representatives for the first time in 8 years. President Donald Trump is giving his reaction to the results of this hour, saying the Republicans did well. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell thanked Trump for his campaigning.
In looking at the race, I want to thank the president. He was extremely helpful to us in states where he is in excellent shape. He worked very hard and drew large crowds, and I think it clearly had a positive impact on the outcome.
McConnell was asked at a news conference if the controversy surrounding the nomination of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh helped the Republicans.
Yeah, I think the Republican sort of core voters in the states that were critical to us were highly offended by the questioning of the presumption of innocence and the tactics. And I think it was like an adrenaline shot. We were worried about lack of intensity on our side, and I think the Kavanaugh fight certainly provided that and was extremely helpful. It's noteworthy that the one Democrat in a red state who survived voted for Kavanaugh, Joe Manchin.
I'm joined now by VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, what is the message that U.S. voters sent back to Washington?
I think in a very broad way, Sarah, what we saw was a confirmation of the polarized political landscape that we've seen now for years, but it's sharpened a bit. I mean, the so-called red states, Republican states, where President Trump is popular, they got redder on Tuesday. The blue states, where Democrats hold sway, they got bluer. And there could be some issues there for the president as we look ahead to 2020. Democrats won some governorships in some key states in the upper Midwest. These were states that basically delivered the White House to Donald Trump in 2020. Now they're skewing a bit more on the Democratic side, so that could be an issue. But on the other hand, the president strengthened his hand in the Senate, and it makes it look tough for Democrats to be able to gain much headway in very Republican states.
How will Trump work with a Democratic House of Representatives?
Good question. And, you know, certainly there's going to be talk of possible bipartisanship and compromise, at least initially here. But don't forget that Democrats also now, with the majority in the House, have the ability to launch oversight investigations of the Trump White House. And we don't know where that will go or what they will focus on. And we still, of course, have the Russia probe hanging out there for some sort of resolution. So you have to wonder if they do start down a road of trying to cooperate on something like infrastructure reform or improvement, how the other atmospherics about confronting the administration about possible wrongdoing, how that's going to play, especially in the president's mind.
There were some very significant rate. Well, they were all significant, but some really got a lot of attention. In Texas, you had Republican Senator Ted Cruz. He defeated his opponent, Beto O'Rourke. That got a lot of publicity, that race.
Yeah, and that's a case where someone may have lost the race, but his national profile definitely has risen. And look, I think this is a bit of a warning shot to Democrats that they're going to have to find candidates who are going to be able to be somewhat competitive in red state America in 2020. Now, O'Rourke lost the Senate race to Cruz, but Cruz was favored. It's a Republican state. The fact that O'Rourke did so well, and he has such appeal to younger voters and is a fundraising magnet, I wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way in the conversation about possible Democratic contenders for 2020. There's going to be quite a desire among some Democrats for a fresh face.
And then in Florida, the Senate race, I believe, is still too close to call. And there was an African-American candidate for governor. He lost, but he certainly got a lot of attention.
Yeah, Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, he, you know, was edging ahead in some of the polls right up to Election Day. He came up short. He would have been the first African-American governor in Florida. Florida regains its status, really, as the most important bellwether state. Not only is it big because of its size in terms of population and electoral votes, but presidents who win elections tend to carry Florida. It's a very important state. Obviously, it's very close, but Donald Trump won there narrowly in 2016, and both Republican candidates in the Senate and in for governor this time around appear to have secured narrow victories as well.
And certainly in the House, there were wins among a Native American, African American, and a Muslim American women in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, on the Democratic side, there is this growing diversity aspect to their candidates. We also see a huge surge in terms of women voters and women candidates, and now setting a record for the number of women lawmakers elected. And the other thing about the Democratic surge in the House is it came in a lot of suburban districts around the country. The president is unpopular, and the Republicans are narrowing their kind of slot a bit. They are focused primarily on rural voters in red states. Democrats are solidifying their hold on urban and suburban voters in some of the bigger states around the country, especially along each coast. So that's setting up, again, on one of these titanic struggles in 2020 to see which side can break through and, you know, convince those few voters left in the middle to come to them.
And in the state of Georgia, that race is sort of, it's still held up at the moment.
Yeah, Stacey Abrams was trying to become the first African-American woman governor in U.S. history. She trails Brian Kemp, the Republican candidate, who also happens to be the Secretary of State in Georgia. There are remaining questions about absentee and provisional ballots that have to be sorted out. There could be some court action there. We're going to have to watch that race carefully. But Kemp has a lead, and usually in these cases, that can hold up.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Jim. That's VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Donald Trump and his administration are facing new investigations. School children in Cameroon are released days after abduction by separatists, and the meeting between the top U.S. diplomat and North Korean official has been postponed. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have wondered what Oumuamua, the first interstellar object to visit our solar system, was. Was it an asteroid, comet, a new cosmic body, or perhaps an alien space probe? When it was discovered a little over a year ago, astronomers noticed the object moving away from the sun faster than expected. If it were a comet, a process called outgassing could have caused the increased speed. But Oumuamua lacked cometary traits like a coma or tail. A pair of scientists at the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics proposes the increased acceleration was the result of radiation pressure from the sun. If so, because of its odd, thin shape, the scientists suggest, among many possibilities, that Oumuamua may be a light sail of artificial origin. Light sails propelled by solar radiation have been proposed to send CubeSats into deep space. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, 400,000 malnourished children are at risk of dying in war-torn Yemen. We'll have a report. Leaders have been reacting to the U.S. midterm election results as America's partners and rivals try to decipher what the Democratic Party's new majority in the House of Representatives could mean for the future of President Trump's foreign policy agenda over the coming years. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
As it became clear that they had won control of the House Tuesday night, Democrat celebrations began as Minority Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared a new day in America. Is it a new dawn, too, for American foreign policy? Not so, says Professor Peter Trubowitz, director of the U.S. Center at the London School of Economics and Political Science.
The main play that Donald Trump now has is on the foreign policy side, where he has much more discretionary authority and room to maneuver than he does on the domestic side. So I would actually look for Trump to double down on trade with China, on Iran, and on the border with Mexico.
Trubowitz says Democrats may offer support for Trump's stance on China. Washington has imposed tariffs on $250 billion in imports, accusing Beijing of unfair trade practices. Chinese officials did not comment on the election results. Europe also fears U.S. tariffs on its key exports, like cars. Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said Wednesday the election results are unlikely to ease tensions.
Niemand wird uns das abnehmen. Auf die Devise America first.
Speaking to reporters, Maas said, on this side of the Atlantic, we have to find an answer to the US motto of America first, which to me can only be Europe united. Other European leaders praised the number of women elected to the House. A spokesperson for the Russian President Vladimir Putin said relations with the US would not change, as it would be hard to make them any worse. In the Middle East, Israel urged President Trump not to allow electoral losses to derail peace plans for the region, which has seen the US controversially move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The Palestinians also claim Jerusalem as the capital of a future state. Nabil Sharth, an advisor to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, urged a change of course in Washington.
The Democrats in the United States are getting closer to a position that may lead eventually to a peace process.
World leaders will now be wondering what comes next in America, says analyst Trubowitz.
Whether or not to wait Donald Trump out. In other words, to play for time over the next 2 years. This will be the calculation being made in Tehran, in Beijing, and perhaps in some European capitals as well.
That calculation would appear tough to solve, with U.S. politics seen as increasingly volatile. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The Afghan pilot who penned a moving letter to the wife and seven children of a U.S. service member and city mayor killed days ago in Afghanistan tells VOA he wrote the tribute to let them know how much their husband and father had inspired him. Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb talks to those whose lives were impacted by the slain soldier.
Afghan Special Mission pilot Major Abdulrahman Rahmani served alongside slain Utah National Guardsman Major Brent Taylor on multiple missions.
And one of our missions was delayed for like 3 days, so we had a great deal of time together.
During those times, Taylor would give his Afghan counterparts positive messages and often talked about the future of Afghanistan.
You would be motivated throughout the day. It was amazing. He was an amazing guy. Like, he was really, really incredible.
Their friendship was a glimmer of humanity forged in the darkness of a cruel war that's killed thousands of Afghans and Americans over the last 17 years. Rahmani never expected his letter to Taylor's wife to go viral. In the letter, he wrote that Taylor taught him to be a better father, a better husband, a better man. He told VOA that Taylor even convinced him to apologize to his wife after overhearing an argument they had.
He was not shy about his opinions and what he thought, and he would tell you when you were wrong.
That's Adam Gardner, a friend of Taylor's who runs in the same Utah political circles as the North Ogden mayor did.
But he never made you feel like he was attacking you ever.
Gardner said many times he and Taylor would start talking or texting about politics, but end up talking about their families.
And to be able to volunteer for another tour of duty is just the ultimate selfless service, because I know, because he talks about it so often, I know how much those kids and his wife meant to him.
Taylor's body was returned to the United States as millions of Americans cast their votes for local, state, and national representatives. In a Facebook post just days before his death, Taylor pleaded with Americans to vote, stressing that there was far more as Americans that unites us than divides us. Thousands of miles away in Afghanistan, Rahmani told VOA he hoped his letter also conveyed a message of solidarity against those who wish to divide American and Afghan allies.
You cannot change our mentality, and you cannot change our bond, you know, like our unity.
Rahmani, who has been wounded twice and has lost several family members during the war, vowed to persevere and continue the fight for his homeland.
This country needs people to defend it. You know, if I leave this country, if I quit, who's going to take this responsibility? You know, somebody must take the responsibility. I want to be one.
Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
United Nations agencies warn hundreds of thousands of severely malnourished children in war-torn Yemen could die because of food shortages and lack of money to provide life-saving therapeutic treatment. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Years of prolonged conflict in Yemen are taking a heavy toll, especially on the children. The United Nations calls Yemen the worst humanitarian and security crisis in the world. It warns 14 million people, or one half of the population, are on the brink of famine. The main casualties are the children. Before the war, the country had one of the highest rates of malnutrition in the world. Since the Saudi-led coalition began its campaign of airstrikes against Houthi rebels in support of the government in March 2015, malnutrition levels have soared. The UN Children's Fund warns 400,000 children under age 5 are suffering from severe acute malnutrition and are at risk of dying. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouyrak says every year, 30,000 children under age 5 are dying from malnutrition-related diseases. He says one half of Yemen's young children are chronically malnourished.
1.1 million pregnant or lactating women are anemic, and that's a vicious cycle. When giving birth, these women know that their children will be of low birth weight, starting that cycle of malnutrition. And as we all know, chronic malnutrition has an incredibly important impact on child brains development. Every 10 minutes, a child is dying from disease that can be easily prevented.
Fighting in Yemen has led to the almost total collapse of the country's health system. It also has prevented the import of food, fuel, medicine, and other supplies critical for the well-being of the population. For example, the World Health Organization reports the current supply of fuel imports through the port of Hodeidah only cover about half of the country's needs. It adds the fuel is vital to keep hospitals running. It says these hospitals house the therapeutic feeding centers that could save the lives of severely malnourished children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Thank you. This is International Edition. A highly successful singer who had one of the biggest hits of 2018 has released a new single. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the latest.
Today, Sarah, we're talking about a brand new song from one of the hottest female singers in music, Camila Cabello. We've talked about her before. She's back, and with her comes a bunch of new awards. She was just in Spain for the MTV Europe Music Awards show. She was the big winner of the night with four awards, including Artist of the Year and Song of the Year for Havana, the same two awards she had won a month earlier at the MTV Video Music Awards. She has a new song, which we're going to listen to today on our International Edition. This one's called Consequences, which is a true story based on a past relationship she had. So let's listen to Consequences, Camila Cabello.
Dirty tissues, trust issues, glasses on the sink, they didn't fix you. Lonely pillows and a stranger's bed, little voices in my head. Sacred keeping, stop the bleeding, lost a little weight because...
Okay, Larry, what about this relationship she had?
Well, it's a past relationship, and she's very, very private with her personal relationships and her personal life. She'll only reveal exactly what she wants you to know. One thing she wants you to know is that despite the tabloid, she is not pregnant. She said, yeah, I may have added a little bit of weight to my waist because I was on tour and I ate a lot on tour. She said, but please ignore my belly. I am not pregnant. The song Havana has been huge for her. It has won Song of the Year at so many different award shows. And speaking of awards, Camila this year alone has won at the Billboard Women in Music. She won an American Music Award for New Artist of the Year and Favorite Pop Song, Billboard Achievement Award, Global Music Award for Best Female, Kids' Choice Award for Favorite Breakout Artist. She's won many more, still nominated for many more. The song Havana has been viewed on YouTube 702 million times. And she was just on a headline tour. She was also touring with Taylor Swift earlier in the year. But she's one of the hottest artists to come. And all of this success, despite the fact she dropped out of high school in ninth grade at the Miami Palmetto High School. She's proud to say that eventually she did get her GED and one day does hope to go to a college. Camila works with charity. She is closely connected to the Children's Health Fund, which provides health care for low-income children. And she's a role model for many kids, young and old, and she continues to tour. And this is only her first album, which
incredible.
Is called Camila. Yeah, and so she's having big success, and the future's bright for this young star.
Is she still based in Miami?
She is still based in Miami, and she can be based anywhere she wants with all the money she's made. But, yeah, she lives with her family in Miami who are originally from Cuba. And, in fact, her father was originally from Mexico, so it's a very interesting mixture from Latin heritage. She's won a number of Latin music awards as well, and looking forward to hearing more music from her and hopefully meeting her in the future. She's due to come to Washington in December for the annual Jingle Ball Festival that I'll be covering for Border Crossings, so I hope to catch up with Camila. And for those that don't know, because you've been living under a rock or are from another planet, Camila was once a member of the group Fifth Harmony. She was the first one to leave, and then ultimately the entire group disintegrated from there. But she is off on a great solo career.
Okay, Camila. Remember Larry when you come to the Jingle Ball.
That's right. She does. She does remember me. It's amazing. I saw her last year. She came and gave me a hug. So that's kind of touching when they do remember you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
I'm loving you like sunshine, but then it pours.
The music of Camila Cabello brings us an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.